Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me is Brandon Kylie. Before I formally introduce everyone, it would appear some breaking news. Quentin Grimes has received a waiver from the NCAA and will be eligible to play this season. As you know, he transferred from Kansas. He is now at the University of Houston. So Quentin Grimes will be eligible to play college basketball this season. Again, my name is Carrington. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine, who graduated and is an alum of the University of Kansas, and Brandon Kylie, who is an alum and graduated from Missouri. Today's show is going to be a lot of fun. How's everybody doing today?
I'm really looking forward to today's show. That's going to be one hot ticket inside of Sprint Center, December 12th of 2020. The hottest ticket since, what, Bruno Mars?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an absolute crazy ticket at the Sprint Center. We'll get into that. We'll get into a lot of different things in today's show. Thanks so much for listening. Before we dive deeper into MU and KU renewing the border war, we need caller number 6 to 913-576-7610. As we do to start every show, we're giving you a prize. We're giving away a free 16-inch pizza from the other place. All you got to do is three things. Number one, you got to be listening at 2 o'clock and you got to tell one friend. You don't got to tell two friends, just got to tell one. Number two, you got to be calling number 6 to 913-576-7610. And number three, you got to say M-I-Z-Z-O-U. The border war is back. If you do all three of those things, then you are the winner of a 16-inch pizza. We'll also give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest coming up in just a few. So I want to take a trip back in time to, I believe this was 2017. You guys might remember this. Missouri and Kansas agreed to play a game for hurricane relief. And a question was posed to Bill Self about, hey, you said that you didn't want to play Missouri at all. You had some change of heart to agree to play them in a preseason game. Is there a chance that we can see this be a regular season matchup? Here's what the head coach of your Kansas Jayhawks had to say about that, Sean.
Just because fans from Missouri thought it was such a great deal does not in any way, shape, or form sway us to move in a direction to play. The reason we'll play is strictly because we feel like that we need the game and it's best for us. Our stance hasn't changed on that, and that's not being negative or mean. That's just being very factual.
So before we really get going, I want to give two people credit because I think they are the two people that deserve the most credit for the border war returning. I want to give credit to Kansas Athletic Director Jeff Long. I don't think this happens with another athletic director in charge. You might not know this, but Jeff Long's daughter attends the University of Missouri. He was formerly the athletic director at the University of Arkansas, which is obviously in the SEC. I think his ties to the SEC, I think his relationship with Missouri played a major factor, and his relationship with Missouri athletic director Jim Stirk is one of the reasons why this game is here. It also ultimately came down to one person signing off, and that person is Bill Self. I don't know if his relationship with Konzo Martin, I don't know if it's finally someone sat him down and told him all the financial ramifications of what a game like this means, if he thinks this helps KU in attendance or recruiting or whatever it is. But at some point, someone very high up at Kansas, and probably Jeff Long, had to go to Bill Self and say, hey, we are on board. Are you on board with this? And at some point, Bill Self, for whatever reason, his stance on playing Missouri changed, and he deemed that it is now best for Kansas. And I also want to point out, they did not agree to some one-off game at Sprint Center as a test run. For them to agree to play for the next 6 basketball seasons tell you that Missouri is invested in this, Kansas is invested in this, Kansas City as a whole, as a region, is invested in it. I want to give Kansas their credit. Missouri has always been up for playing Kansas in basketball, football, tiddlywinks, or marbles. Kansas eventually had to get on board. I give them all the credit for finally coming around.
While you're patting my guys on the back, a little credit to your guy Jim Stirk also, because it takes two to tango, and I think that Jeff Long and Jim Stirk got together. Jeff Long's been at his job for less than a year. Well, Jim Stirk's been there now for a couple of years, I think going on year number 3. I think those guys got together, and it's like a lot of arguments, not just in sports but in life, and they went like, what are we really even fighting about? Like, what's this whole thing over? And they were adults about the whole thing and realized that there's a lot of money to be made. There's a lot of fans that could be happy. And they made the right decision. As you said, I think it was brilliant to go with six games. It would have been easy to go with one game at Sprint Center, see how it goes, and then renew the series after that. When you make a commitment to six games, the way they did it, where you're going to play at the Sprint Center next year, then Allen Fieldhouse, then at MU, and then back at Sprint Center, Allen Fieldhouse, and MU, that was the perfect way to do it. I think KU goes 5-1. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But I think a six-game series was a brilliant decision.
I want to read to you guys a quote from Bill Self. So this is present day. Quote, even though we haven't played the game the last few years, I know it was something our players, fans missed, and so did I. The fact that Bill Self had to admit yesterday that he missed Missouri, you don't want to know what that meant and how much it warmed my heart. This is why. I have sat here in this exact same chair and argued this for so long, and KU fans have tried to tell me time and time again how much they don't care about Missouri and how much this game doesn't mean to them. Even though whenever Michael Porter gets hurt, the text line is flooded with KU fans. Whenever Missouri loses to Wyoming or they lose to Vanderbilt, the text line is flooded with Wyoming. Or with KU fans. There is no shame in admitting that sports are better in Kansas City when these two teams play each other. Is it going to mean the exact same as it did back in 1999 when they were in the Big 8, Big 12? No, it's never going to go back to this. But the way that it is currently packaged as a holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you can go with your family down to Sprint Center, make the drive over to Columbia, make the drive down to Mizzou. It is going to be so much fun that I don't understand how people, I assume if you listen to the show in any capacity, you have a strong passion and desire for sports. I don't know how you could be opposed to it if one of your goals in sports is to make it more interesting. Like, it's okay to admit that both sides need each other. I have been to MU-KU games. I have been to K-State games against KU. I've been to KU games against Iowa State. It ain't the same. Like, there is a hole, there is a void missing at Kansas because you don't play Missouri. That will never be filled by K-State. That will never be filled by Iowa State. It won't be filled by Oklahoma. It won't be filled by Oklahoma State. Your rival is Missouri. Missouri fans have admitted this a long time ago. My rival is not Georgia. My rival's not South Carolina. My rival's not Florida. My rival is not winning in big games. My rival is the University of Kansas. This is just the best thing for everybody.
Yeah, they tried to fabricate that MU-Arkansas rivalry and KU-K-State sort of rivalry. Nothing like the border war. Nothing like KU and MU on the basketball court. I mean, you could argue outside of UNC-Duke and Louisville-Kentucky, KU and MU is the third best college basketball rivalry. It's like any type of relationship where they don't need each other. I mean, we've seen the last few years, KU still had success and had lottery picks, and Allen Fieldhouse is still full, 16,300 people for every single game, and MU got Michael Porter Jr. I mean, they've been okay without each other, but they're clearly better with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if need, like, I think need here is relative. I don't think that Kansas needs Missouri to be successful on the basketball court. They're certainly doing just fine without it. But in terms of fan interest, the ticket for the game at Allen Fieldhouse is going to be the most expensive ticket. I don't know what their home basketball schedule is, but they play K-State there. The Missouri ticket's going to be bigger. They probably play some team in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. It's going to be a bigger deal. It's going to be the biggest regular season game in Kansas since the last time these two teams played each other. So need here is relative to interest. College basketball has a problem right now. College basketball is so focused on March that we completely disregard the other months. We don't care about November. We don't care about December. They still play college basketball during those months. I'm for making college basketball as interesting as possible in non-conference play. So I'm for Kansas playing Missouri. I'm for Missouri playing St. Louis. I'm for Kansas playing Wichita State. I just want sports to be more enjoyable. Isn't that why we all subscribe to it? Like, we want to see our teams win. We also want them to play in interesting games and in fun environments. Isn't that what this is?
I can't imagine how much that ticket's going to be. Like, you talk about the one inside Allen Fieldhouse and the year after that back in Columbia. The Sprint Center ticket, the first time this really goes down, think about how wild it was the last couple of years when they had that event you were talking about for hurricane relief and the rivalry renewed and all that. I mean, Sprint Center was full. People were wearing their KU and MU gear. It didn't feel like an old school KU-MU game, but damn, it felt as close to it as possible. Can you imagine when it actually goes down for real, December 20th, 2020? That place is going to be packed, and the tickets are probably going to be close to $500.
Text line 69306, CDOT, maybe we as KU just get tired of whooping your ass so much that it's not even fun anymore. I've been watching Kansas beat Missouri in basketball my entire life. I knew that when I kept wanting Missouri to play Kansas that they were going to lose the game. It's just more fun that they play, and it's been fun over the last 24 hours. KU fans who have been adamant on their reasons why they didn't want to play Missouri have now had to say, well, you guys are signing up for a loss. We've been trying to tell you this from the beginning. We were literally, since the moment Missouri made the decision to go to the SEC, all the reasons now why they are playing each other, we have been telling you these reasons for 7 years of why they should play each other. It's not like Jeff Long figured out some magical formula that the rest of us have not seen. They were always going to make a lot of money. It was always going to be great for interest. It was always going to be great for Kansas City. It's now that Missouri has become a borderline tournament team. It's like, oh, well, now we can play Missouri. Y'all was playing bum-ass Nebraska. Y'all was playing sorry-ass Colorado. You guys are playing UMKC at Sprint Center. Kansas is playing the Kangaroos, who have never made the NCAA tournament. You don't even know what conference they're in. They're playing them at Sprint Center. How is that beneficial to Kansas?
The whack. Bro, let's not pretend like this is one-sided pettiness. I agree that the fight got a little bit out of control, and at this point it's like, what were we even fighting over? What caused that? But it came from both sides. I'll admit there was a lot of pettiness coming from KU. You're the ones that change conferences. You're the ones that benefit if we play this game. But a lot of that was coming from y'all side, too.
I just want to point out that UMKC is no longer in the WAC. They're in the Summit League. My point. Yeah, okay. You have no clue what conference UMKC is in, and Kansas is playing them at basketball this year at
Not
Sprint
the WAC
Center.
Anymore?
Are you telling me this isn't better? Playing Missouri at Sprint Center in the exact same time that you were going to play random Power 5 school? This isn't more enjoyable. This isn't better for everybody. Stop it. Everybody knows this is better. Everybody knows that this is good for Power and Light. It's good for Kansas City. It's good for Missouri. It's good for Kansas. It's good for everybody involved. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. And we have a poll question. Over or under 1.5 wins for Missouri in this 6-game series against Kansas? I mean, it's going to be good getting off to that good 1-0 start next year whenever Josh Christopher is at Mizzou and then he dunks all over whatever random player is on KU. Uh-huh. So we'll get to that question coming up in about 20 minutes. Coming up next, it is trending that the Chiefs are not going to make a move at the deadline. That's a problem. We'll talk about it coming up. So Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Sports Machine, I told myself I wasn't going to argue with the text line today.
What?
I'm already breaking that rule 18 minutes into the show. Text line 69306. This rivalry would be ideal if they only played at Sprint Center. Playing in Columbia does nothing for KU, only Missouri. Playing at Allen doesn't benefit KU either because they already sell out every home game and MU will likely be unranked. Playing at Sprint Center every year would be beneficial for everyone. This is what people that watch college basketball want me to believe this. That playing a road non-conference game in a hostile environment doesn't help your team at all. Like, there's no benefit to playing those games. That's what the text line wants me to believe. That's what KU fans want me to believe. I understand that you're unhappy about Missouri. But come on now. If you watch college basketball, you know that there's a benefit to playing a non-conference road game in a hostile environment to see what your team is made of early in the year against a Power 5 opponent. So let's stop it.
Even if you lose, and that's probably what's going to happen, what you're talking about, power conference, a Power 5 opponent at Allen Fieldhouse against Bill Self, he wins like 97% of those games. MU's probably not going to come into fog and win, but they certainly have a chance those couple of games at MU. And then on neutral court at Sprint Center, I think the 6 games was the exact right amount, at least to start off with.
Coming up, we will get into our one big question, over-under wins for Missouri during the 6-game series at 1.5. We'll get Sean's results on this. I have a feeling he might not give Missouri a single win in all of this. So we'll get to the one big question coming up in just a little bit. So the Brandon Kiley show featuring Therese Paylor was on yesterday. And Therese, he doesn't think there's going to be much available for the Chiefs at the trading deadline.
I think the Chiefs were dealt a dose of bad luck by the Cardinals suddenly deciding to wake up and play football. They're 3-3-1 right now somehow. And
I'm pausing it. I'm trying to pause it.
Easy,
I don't know why
Therese.
I keep trying to hit the
Take
button.
Take it easy, Therese.
I think it's BK.
I didn't touch anything.
Pressing buttons. I kept trying to hit the button. I'm very frustrated right now. So you're telling me, this is what Therese wants me to believe, and I'll start it over. And I trust Therese reporting as much as I trust anybody not named Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport. Therese wants me to believe that the Chiefs' only plan of action to improving their team was to wait for Patrick Peterson. He's the only player in the NFL that can help them improve their roster. This bottom five run defense, their linebacker core, the only player in the NFL that they have deemed worthy and able to help the Kansas City Chiefs was Patrick Peterson. There's not one. There's not Deion Jones from Atlanta. There's not Desmond Trufant. There's no linebacker in the NFL that can come in and be an improvement over what they have. It's basically Patrick Peterson or bust. That's what Therese wants me to believe.
Well, when it comes to cornerbacks, he's actually right. If we're talking about frontline quarterbacks, we can break them down one by one. Patrick Peterson, he ain't coming. The Cardinals are 3-3. That ship has sailed. Marcus Peters, he already played for you. That was never going to happen. Jalen Ramsey, I'm pretty sure Jacksonville was hell-bent to trade him to an NFC team, which the Chiefs are not. And Chris Harris is a division opponent. Those are the guys that we're talking about. It's circumstantial. It's unfortunate. But if the Chiefs land a cornerback at this point, it's probably not going to be that big fish we once thought it was going to be.
Xavien Howard can help the Kansas City Chiefs?
He's the one. He's the one that I think if they can work a trade with Miami, and Miami's been siphoning off pieces since before the season even started, but now they've really got themselves pigeonholed. If we're talking about one position, one player, and Xavien Howard doesn't work, then you're really getting scratched.
We also don't know that he's available. Like, they re-signed him in the offseason, and we can want him to be available the same way that we want Patrick Peterson or Xavier Rhodes or Chris Harris Jr. Like, we can name all these dudes. Eventually, the team that has them has to be willing and able to trade them to the Chiefs, and we have no reason to believe right now, other than the fact that the Dolphins stink, that they're particularly interested in trading Xavien Howard, a guy they just re-signed this offseason by the same exact regime that is now in place there in Miami. They might view him as a cornerstone piece that gets them out of this rebuild.
And you say eventually, BK, like that eventually is here. We're a week away from the trade deadline. We would know by now if these teams were at least shopping these players. When it comes to Xavien Howard, I think there's been more talk from teams like the Chiefs that maybe want him than the Dolphins actually willing to trade him.
So let's go back to what Therese had to say. I don't understand the logic that only Patrick Peterson was going to help you. Like, that was their plan at cornerback this season. If firmly, and maybe this is me, I'm getting back on my corner dot bag. The plan was, we don't like any corner in the draft. We don't like any corner in free agency. The only corner in the NFL we like is Patrick Peterson. That's their plan at the position? All right, we'll see if it works for you.
I think the Chiefs were dealt a dose of bad luck by the Cardinals suddenly deciding to wake up and play football. They're 3-3-1 right now somehow, and I don't think they're going to move Peterson. I mean, they're just at a point now where they're competitive. You know, Steve Keim is trying to like win enough games. Unless something happens there, I don't think that that's something that, you know, that they're going to move on right now. And then from there, listen, you can get some guys that might be out there, right? Like, you know, I'm thinking that it's good, that the only thing out there that's like really available like are bad contracts. So I'm just telling you where I'm at right now is that this team's going to have to get better by internal improvement, because I'm just not hearing about a lot of candidates outside of the organization that are viable, that will help you. It's just bad contracts right now.
I already know I'm going to be very frustrated at the deadline, and I might lose it.
I've been trying to tell you for the last couple of weeks, don't put your faith into Brett Veach. You're going to be disappointed. Now we're a week away. I don't think this dude's going to pull the trigger on anybody.
Can I ask an honest question?
Yeah.
What reason should I have to believe that the Chiefs are going to beat the Patriots in the playoffs? What reason should I have to believe it?
Patrick Mahomes.
And reinforcements. Reed. That's it.
If you're a neutral observer.
Mahomes is Andy. And this is not an unfair thing to say.
Okay.
The Chiefs had Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid last year and basically nothing else. And were a play away from going to the Super Bowl. And were an offsides away from going to the Super Bowl. So you ask how? Why? Because of that.
I mean, it's starting to look like it's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of dudes again this year. So I think the answer is reinforcements. You're going to get back, in theory, at some point, knock on wood, maybe Sammy Watkins. Eric Fisher will be back. Chris Jones will be back. I still think that you're talking about the two best teams in the entire NFL, the Chiefs and the Patriots, when fully healthy.
When was the last time you saw the Chiefs be the second best team in the NFL?
I mean, they haven't been healthy since Patrick Mahomes injured his ankle the first quarter of week one, and Tyreek Hill went out about the same time. So when you're without your big guns, you have to judge the team differently. I do think that by the time Patrick Mahomes comes back, let's call it around a month, maybe it's after the bye, we'll figure out exactly when that is. At that point, I expect it not just to be he'll be back, but Chris Jones should be back, and Eric Fisher should be back. The wild card, Sammy Watkins, who knows what he's going to be. But by the time the playoffs roll around, or at least the New England game comes around, this team should be as healthy as they've been all season.
I just think three against the Ravens was the last time.
Yeah, I just think at some point we got to start talking about the Chiefs, about what they are, and not every conversation about what we think they're going to be. The Patriots are currently the best team in the NFL and are still out wheeling and dealing and making moves to currently improve their roster. They're not just expecting internal improvements from the wide receivers they have. Hey, we're void at a position. Let's go trade a draft pick to go get Mohamed Sanu so we can have more playmakers on the outside. So if we need to get in that shootout with the Kansas City Chiefs, we have more weapons to do it. Teams, once again, are preparing for the battle, And the Chiefs are sitting there sucking their thumbs. They're not doing anything at this current point. Now, we'll see if they do something. But I know Therese and how measured he is. If he's saying not much is available and he's hearing about internal improvements, it's hoping that things are going to turn around with this linebacker core. Do I have any reason to believe things are turning around with this linebacker core? If something happens, like, we think that no one else is going to get hurt from week 8 until week 17 of the NFL season. The odds are someone else is going to get hurt because that's kind of how football works. Are they not prepared for that being the situation? I don't know if this current team is good enough. Based on what we've seen so far, I would say no. I don't think their current team is good enough. This team, at least the one we've watched so far this season, haven't looked like the team that lost in the AFC Championship game very often this season. Maybe two quarters, second quarter against Oakland, maybe you could argue against the Ravens, first quarter against Jacksonville. Like, how many times have we seen that team you're talking about?
Don't you think they will, though? Like, do you have any reason to think that once the Chiefs are healthy, that they're not going to be that same team that played in the AFC Championship game last year that puts up 35 points per game? If anything, I think they're going to be a little bit better when fully healthy.
Yeah, we'll certainly see what happens. We'll certainly see what happens. I just, based on how the season's gone and how football goes, is there any certainty that they're ever going to be fully healthy?
Not at all.
Once Chris Jones comes back, then Frank Clark could go out. Like, that's just kind of how football works. Are you prepared for it when it happens? The Chiefs haven't been very prepared for it, in my opinion. Coming up, we have a one big question. Over or under 1.5 wins for Missouri in this 6-game series against Kansas. How do you think the Tigers will do? And we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. That's coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
It's your chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. Text the word DANCE, D-A-N-C-E, DANCE, to 72881. That's DANCE. 610 Sports Radio is the only sports radio station in Kansas City giving you a chance to win up to $8,000 each weekday. All you got to do is listen in on the 30s from 9 to 5. Your next chance to win is coming up in 1 hour, but go ahead and win right now. One more time for those of you in the back that are keeping score. DANCE, D-A-N-C-E, DANCE, to 72881. The National Cash Contest code word for 230 is DANCE. Coming up, we will go through rapid fire with some of our MU and KU takeaways. But first, BK, let's get to our one big question.
One big question.
The one big question goes today as follows. Getting away from the Kansas City Chiefs, I will set the over-under on Missouri wins against Kansas at 1.5. Sports Machine, what are you taking? Are you taking the over or the under on 1.5 wins for Missouri in the 6-game series against your Kansas Jayhawks?
So the rotation is starting next year, December 12th, 2020. The game will be at Sprint Center, so essentially a neutral court. The year after that, Allen Fieldhouse. Year after that, in Columbia. Then they'll do the same thing. So they'll play this game 6 times. Can MU win 2 of them? Probably not. I'll give them 1. I think MU wins 1 game at home. There's no way they come to Allen Fieldhouse. Those games at Sprint Center are going to be the most coveted ticket in that building since maybe, I don't know, Garth Brooks opened the joint 15 years ago. It's going to be absolutely wild. And this is what I love about the rivalry, that it splits the metro area. We're all Chiefs fans. We're all Royals fans. But when it comes to KU-MU, we've all got our own separate opinions. I can't see MU winning more than one of those games. I think it's going to be as intense as KU is for any game that season, certainly any Big 12 game that season when they're playing MU. So I'll give MU 1, BK, but I can't go much higher than that.
BK, we're asking the question. You taking the over or under on Missouri wins against Kansas at 1.5? Are you taking the over or the under?
I think this sets up pretty well for Mizzou, in part because, to go over this, let me clarify. I don't think they're going to win like 4 of these games, but I think Mizzou is starting to build what they expected to be under Konzo Martin. The young players are starting to become juniors and seniors, and certainly by about midway through this series, that's what you're going to anticipate. I think Mizzou's about to have a pretty good program, a top 30 to 40 program in the country, and when you have that, you should expect to go something like 2-4 in a series like this against Kansas. So I'm going to take the over. I think they win at least 2 of these games against KU.
What say you?
I think 1.5 is the proper line. Let's go ahead and give them a guaranteed 2 losses at Allen Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is a 0% chance that they win either of the games. I don't know who's going to be on Missouri's team. I don't know who's going to be on Kansas's team. But I know the history of that building and the officiating in that building. Missouri ain't winning either one of those games. So it basically comes down to, do you think they can win 2 of the 4 other games? I'll go with over. I think they can win 1 in Columbia and 1 in Sprint Center. I don't know which one they'll get in Sprint, but if they can get one in Sprint and one in Columbia over the 6 years, I think they're fine. I'll take the over. But to me, two is probably the most likely and best case scenario. There's no way they get three. No way they get three. It's either one or two. I don't think Kansas wins all six of the games.
The other thing we got to remember is this is right around the time when Bill Self always comes out and says our team doesn't play defense. It's going to be in December. This is the perfect timing to catch KU at the moment right before they go into conference play when Bill Self wants to make his point to his fans and to his team that his team's not playing good defense right now. This is the right timing as well for the games at Sprint Center for Mizzou to be able to steal at least one of those two.
Oh, we don't guard anybody. You're going to hear that at some point, but there's no way Kansas isn't hyper-focused on this game. I hear what you're saying. Like, this is a trap game. This is the time of year you can usually get Bills. No. Okay, maybe if it's not KU versus MU. I heard Ron saying earlier that he doesn't think this game's going to have quite the luster that it used to. I actually disagree. I think that when you get something taken away that you love, like KU versus MU, once it comes back, it's going to be better than it ever was.
I do think, as someone who has been to probably four or five of those random Kansas games at Sprint Center, I think part of the problem is there's no energy in the building in those games. Like, I was at the last time KU lost in that building in a non-con game. I believe they played Washington. It was Mike Hopkins' first year. There was absolutely no energy in the building, no buzz, no nothing. I think part of it, especially with college players, is they feed off the energy in the crowd. And I think that home court advantage is probably greater in college basketball than any other sport that we watch.
Were you in that same building for the KU-MU exhibition?
Yes, I was there.
Was there energy then?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I know that I was about to get to that point. I think in this, it's going to be different because I'm with you when it comes to the focus level in this. I don't think KU is going to be able to sleepwalk the way that they do during those other games because of the energy that you're talking about. Like, it's going to be in a situation where you got to get up to play. If you don't get up to play, you are going to get embarrassed. Like, you are going to lose to Missouri and hear about it for so long that I'm with you. I think the focus level in this is going to be different than if they play random Power 5 school because I think the fans are going to be in it more. The energy and atmosphere in the building is going to be very different.
I don't think it's going to be like the last year that these two teams played because we knew at that point that MU was going to the SEC and it was the last time for a long time, maybe ever at that point, we were going to see those two teams get together. So that last game in Columbia was special. That last game in Lawrence was a top three, I was there moment being a fan my entire life. It's probably not going to be that intense, but it's going to get back to the way it was for 100 years.
Text line 69306. Who's to say that KU is going to get the recruits they are used to while they have this black cloud over their head? That's part of it, too. I do believe that KU is going to have some level of sanctions over the next 6 years, but I won't say that KU is going to have a down year. I just don't know if KU is going to be dominant. Like, I think KU is going to have another one of the years that they just had over the next 6 years.
What are the sanctions really going to do? Like, assuming that they're not extremely long-term, if we're talking about 1 or 2 years, they can't be postseason eligible, get scholarships taken away, over the next 6 years, how much is that really going to affect this year?
I mean, if they're going to take scholarships away and you don't think that they're going to make the NCAA tournament, if you're a one-and-done kid, would you go to Kansas? Like, if you are only going to be in school for 1 year, and you know that 1 year there's no chance that you can play in the NCAA tournament. Is that a school that you would attend? Like, that's probably not where I'm going. So I do think we'll see some effects, but it depends on what the sanctions are. I do think they're going to see some sanctions, so I do think that's part of it, especially over the next 6 years. Like, we're going to find out what Kansas's penalty is over the next 6 years. I don't know if it's this year. I don't know if it's next year. I don't know if it's in 2 years. But we are going to find out what their penalty is over the next 6 years.
Didn't Kelly Bryant essentially transfer to MU under those same circumstances? And I know it's a little bit different, but knowing that you couldn't be eligible for the postseason.
He didn't know that when he transferred.
Okay, well then no. But yeah, I mean, I do think that it's obviously going to cost KU recruits going forward, but I don't think it's going to be the type of thing where if they go on probation for the next couple of years, the program goes away. I think if they could pick up right where they left off for the next 6 years.
Yeah, I don't think it's go away, but I don't know if you're going to be on the same level as Duke and Kentucky if you can't make the NCAA tournament for 2 years.
Like, you have to be to beat MU, though? Like, no, do you have to beat Duke or Kentucky to beat MU?
But I would just say the margin, if you're playing in a neutral site, if KU is going to make last year's KU team, Missouri can beat that team. Like, last year's KU team, that's a 4 or 5 seed, that's a good team, but not a great overpowering team. You can absolutely beat that team on a neutral site. You can absolutely beat that team if it comes to your building. I'm talking about KU being the dominant every year. They're one of the three best teams in college basketball. I don't think Missouri has much of a chance to beat that team. If Kansas takes a step back from that because of the sanctions, they absolutely leave themselves to be upset by a team like Missouri.
And Bill Self's been the head coach since, what, 2004? So we're talking about 16, 17 years. That was his worst team last year, or at least you could argue the least talented team that he's had. So maybe you're right. MU in a vacuum last year could beat KU. 15 of other Bill Self's teams that he's coached at KU would smoke MU.
But there were literally seasons that we watched these teams and Mizzou didn't lose all of the games against Kansas. So I think that's a hard argument to make there.
All right.
So you got them at one? You think they only get one of these six?
I thought I was being generous with one. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I mean, okay.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm shocked you think they're that much better than Missouri on neutral sites and playing in the building.
I just think they're going to get up for each of those individual
games. I don't know if they would beat K-State six times in a row in this scenario, or Iowa State.
Well, it's a little different because they play K-State every year. They haven't had the, eight-year hiatus.
I know. I'm saying is if they played KU or if they played K-State or Iowa State in the same scenario, I don't think they would beat them six times in a row. I don't think they would beat them. Like, let's say that Iowa State joined a random conference, and then they just agreed at Sprint Center to play with how Iowa State fans are. I don't think they beat Iowa State all six times. I think they probably beat them the same. I think it's 4-2.
I think Iowa State's a bit of a probably a better basketball program than MU's been over the last decade or so. But again, that's a different conversation for another day. I just think that KU's going to individually get up for each one of these games. And I gave you one. I said one. I think that MU probably wins one of the two games. I can't see, like you said, MU coming into Lawrence and winning it out in Fieldhouse. Nobody does. And those games at Sprint Center are just going to be such a rabid environment. Maybe MU pulls one of those out. Maybe they get to two. I'd be shocked if they get to three.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll get into the cover two. We'll get into a college football topic and an NFL topic. But before we do that, BK, let's go rapid fire.
Let's go a little rapid-fire college basketball. How about this? Mizzou KU is back, so let's get a few questions from you guys. C-Dot, let's start with you. What do you hate most about the opposing fan base?
I think the KU fans are Iowa State fans that win. Like, I think Iowa State fans are incredibly annoying. Their team has never committed a foul. Their team's never traveled. Their team's never done anything wrong. I think KU fans are Iowa State fans that win.
What do I hate most about MU fans? How long we got? I'll answer this.
About 30 seconds. This rapid fire.
30 seconds. Okay. I know you guys won that game in 2008 at Arrowhead. I understand. Y'all won that football game. Good for you. Did you win a BCS game that year? No. KU went on and beat Virginia Tech. And if they would have gone on and lost that game, then I would hear that conversation. And that should have been MU. No, KU went on and beat a very good football team. They've got a BCS win. You don't. I'm done hearing that argument. I get it. You guys won that football game. Congratulations.
I hate how KU fans always hate their own team. But if anybody else says anything negative about their team, that person is the hater. It's unbelievable to me. Every year, KU fans hate the basketball team that's on the court. But if I say they're the fifth best team in the country, well, how can you not have them first? I don't understand it. Second question for you, rapid fire Mizzou versus KU.
I will say really quick, I guess it goes in that same vein. What I do love most about KU fans is, KU fans, they tell me how great the Big 12 is. If you suggest that any other team from the Big 12 is good, they're like the worst team. We're like, oh, well, how about Kansas winning? No, it's the best, most competitive. How can it be the most competitive conference if one team has won 14 in the last 15 years? Doesn't make any sense. It can't be the best.
Let's continue our rapid fire. The loss from the opposing team, so say that for you, KU. The loss from KU that you enjoyed watching the most was what?
Oh, there's so many. For the sake of the question, I will pick... I mean, Northern Iowa's very high up there. I'm going to pick the Elite Eight loss against Oregon. The fact that it wasn't far away, you could just drive right down to Sprint Center. They were basically at home up against Oregon. You had Frank Mason and Devontae Graham and Josh Jackson. Oh, it was supposed to be a celebration. You were supposed to just see walk into the Final Four. But no, Jordan Bell came in and made sure none of that went down. I think that's the worst loss since Self's been there.
I don't know. There are a couple of B schools. That Farouk Manesh loss was very painful. There have been a few of them. My favorite MU loss was Tyus Edney. What was it, like 4.7 seconds left? MU was the better basketball team. Tyus Edney dribbles the length of the court, lays it in the NCAA tournament, and knocks out a Tigers team that I don't know if they could have won the national championship, but certainly could have got to a Final Four. That or the Norfolk State loss. I enjoyed both of those very much.
I think the Northern Iowa one is the correct answer here. I could also make a case, though, for the Stanford loss, because that team was supposed to be so special, and it felt so good to watch them lose that early in the tournament. So I would go with one of those two. All right, last one for you, C-Dot. Your favorite player from the other team, so for you, for KU, that you would never actually admit to liking?
I don't have any problem admitting that I really like Devontae Graham. Like, Devontae Graham was a lot of fun. I liked his backstory. I liked his game. I think his name's going to be up there with Wilt and Danny Manning and all the great KU players. I don't have any problem admitting it. I am a Devontae Graham fan.
I like the Golden Girls. I think they're really good at what they do. AJ, I guess, Arthur Johnson. I like watching Arthur Johnson play basketball. Back to what we were talking about for a minute, as a KU fan, I think most KU fans will tell you the most painful loss was Arizona. The Paul Pierce, Rafe LaFrenne, Jacques Vaughn, Scott Pollard, Jared Haas team. That team was so good. They had lost one game in the regular season. Actually, ironically, it came to MU. I believe it was in overtime.
I think that was Roy's best team.
Yeah, and then they lost. I think that's one of the best college basketball teams ever, and they didn't even end up making it to the Sweet 16 that year. That, to me, is the most painful loss for a KU basketball fan.
Favorite player that you would never admit to?
I guess AJ. I like Flip Pressy. He's all right.
Oh, you've got some great answers here. I'd probably go with Julian Wright as my favorite KU player that I wouldn't want to admit to. He wasn't the best player for Kansas, but he was the most fun player to watch from Kansas. He would probably be my answer, Julian Wright.
We took bowling class together, me and Julian. He's a really good bowler. Actually, these days he's probably a better bowler than he is basketball player, for being completely honest.
Every time I think of Julian Wright, I think of when he missed that windmill dunk on the fast break. That's what I think of every time.
That was great.
That's what I think of every time. Those are some of my favorite. Remember Brady Morningstar's free throw against Texas where he like tripped over the line?
Of course.
That's an all-time great moment. My timeline was filled with the Keon Dooling's, the block charge. That's the worst block charge I've ever seen in my life. I hate block charge. That's maybe the worst one I've ever seen.
What'd you think it was?
It clearly was a foul. What? What kind of question is that? It wasn't a charge.
I thought it was a great call.
You thought it was a great call?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, my bad.
Mm-hmm. There's been a few of those in this series.
Yeah, coming up in a little bit.
K-State fans say the same thing in the KU series. Remember Svi when he took, 14 steps? Oh, yeah, that's cool. He's good.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, we will get into one college football and one NFL topic. But right now, let's head to the phone lines and let's get a little fantasy advice with our guy, Benny Heiss. Benny, always good talking to you, my man. Who are your top waiver wire pickups?
Cam Newton, I think, is the guy that certainly, if you're attacking upside, is the way to go. Remember that he was the number 4 fantasy quarterback last year up until week 11 before he got hurt, before he really messed up that shoulder. So I'm of the belief that when Cam Newton is 100%, he gets the job back. They just have too much invested into him. And also 100% Cam Newton, to me, is better than 100% Kyle Allen. And yes, if you're going about Kyle Allen has been winning, remember all those times we were having the same argument about Alex Smith. So Cam Newton is the better quarterback. He's certainly the better fantasy quarterback. But that also involves his ability to run and scramble and throw on the run. So if you have the room on your bench to invest in Cam Newton long term, I feel like that's the right play. If you need a backup immediately, Ryan Tannehill is an intriguing play. He's going up against Tampa. The Bucs are allowing the 6th most points to fantasy quarterbacks this year. As for the other skill positions, you brought up Ty Johnson. Kerryon Johnson is going to miss some time, several weeks appears to be the case. And again, hopefully you guys were listening last week about Chase Edmonds. With Arizona, I think he's a better pickup than Ty because it sounds like Cliff Kingsbury might be signing Jay Ajayi. That confuses the whole backfield. We still don't know what the case is going to be, and Edmonds has been producing, but at least we know that Ty Johnson in a run-heavy offense is going to get a bulk of the snaps. Kenny Stills, not only him, but also his co-wide receiver Kiki Coutte are really intriguing plays. Kenny Stills gets the Will Fuller role in the offense. Deshaun Watson has clearly shown ability to throw deep and be accurate. And then if Stills doesn't end up available, Coutte operating in the slot has seen a lot more targets. I love him in PPR leagues. And listen, too, BK, like they're not using Duke Johnson the way that they should. He leads the league in yards per run, and yet they still refuse to give him the football and incorporate him in the short passing game. So I think Coutte is available. And then last but not least, a couple other wide receivers we talked about, Ryan Tannehill. Really encouraging to see a good day out of A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. The switch to Tannehill from Mariota incorporates mostly a downhill vertical offense. The two of them were targeted 14 times, 12 catches, 144 yards plus a touchdown. Again, it's a great matchup against the Bucs, and I think their targets are going to stay up as long as Tannehill's in a quarterback.
We're talking with our guy Benny Heiss. It is time for some fantasy advice here on The Drive. You mentioned Sony Michel. I'm assuming you did so because he's on your sell-high list this week?
Yeah, his final numbers might look good, but it's all touchdown-dependent. He's still averaging less than 3.5 yards per carry. And ending up finishing with 42 yards on 19 attempts against the Jets in an absolute blowout win. And like I said, there's a reason the Patriots felt like they had to give up a second rounder to get Mohamed Sanu, because their schedule is going to be more difficult. They're going to be passing more in a lot of these games against tougher competition. And especially with Rex Burkhead eventually coming back and probably playing a role. There's just so many musical chairs at the running back spot that, you know, with Sony Michel, I think the matchup set up well for him, but they're going to be more pass heavy moving forward. So yeah, I'm absolutely selling high on Sony Michel as soon as I can.
On the other side of this, a buy low candidate that I would have, and this is if your team is doing really well. So if you have 1-2 losses on the year, you're starting to look towards the playoffs and you're thinking you could be a contender and you want to win your league. You want to get that money at the end of the year. A guy I'm looking to buy low on right now is Tyreek Hill. Now, he might not have a huge few weeks here, but when you get to the postseason, you're going to have Tyreek Hill with a potentially healthy Patrick Mahomes and a healthy offensive line. Tyreek Hill is a guy that I would be buying low on either this week or next. Who is on your list right now, Benny Heiss?
Yeah, I think any Chiefs on this list is certainly intriguing. Travis Kelce, you can make an argument to try and buy low on him. Now, you're still going to have to give up something for a lot of these guys, because especially if you're a Tyreek Hill owner, you've been waiting for him to come back and be healthy, so to all of a sudden move on from him just because Mahomes is out for 2-3 weeks, I think is going to be a little bit more difficult. But you're absolutely right, he's a buy low candidate. To me, you know, we talked about Travis Kelce. Evan Ingram is that guy for me. Last couple of weeks have not been pretty for him. You know, ends up not playing against the Patriots in what was supposed to be the ideal smash spot opportunity against Arizona. And Arizona has just bled touchdowns to tight ends this year. 5 targets, 1 reception for 6 yards. So Evan Ingram owners are going to be pissed, considering that Rhett Ellison got himself a touchdown as well. The Giants have the best fantasy schedule going during the fantasy playoffs. This is who they play. They're on the road at Philly. Philly can't stop the pass. And then home against Miami and home against Washington. It sucks to consider that you want to target a bunch of New York Giants for the playoff stretch, but with that type of schedule in the passing game, you might want to load up on Daniel Jones. You might want to load up on Evan Ingram. Sterling Shepard is still hurt. Golden Tate. Get whatever Giants you can if you know that you're making the playoffs, because that is the most ideal schedule that I can think of. And right now, Evan Ingram, his value is never going to be lower than what it currently is.
Last thing for you, Heiss. What's going on over this weekend at Fantasy Sports Markets?
Yeah, it's not just this weekend, BK. We got a World Series Survivor contest that is starting tonight over at FantasySportsMarkets.com. Of course, we have the NBA opener as well. There's a chance to win $100 to first place. That doesn't include perfect roster bonuses. And then, of course, for NFL, chance of $220K, college football over $100,000. So get in, use promo code radio for $5 free at FantasySportsMarkets.com if you've not played before. And go ahead and enjoy yourself some DFS without the salary caps to go ahead and constrain you from playing the guys that you want to play.
That is our guy, Benny Heiss. He is presented by Response Genius. Visit ResponseGenius.com and improve your organization's emails, digital, and direct marketing results. Always good to catch up with Benny Heiss from Fantasy Sports Markets. BK and the owner of the Minute Militia.
Yes.
Which fantasy wide receiver do you think is a better option now between Mohamed Sanu and Emmanuel Sanders, who have changed teams in the last 2 hours?
I'll let Sean start this.
Why? Because my fantasy team's in first place. The Minute Militia, 5-2. Give me Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, right now, Jimmy, he needs a target. Did you see what he put up last game? Albeit it was in the rain, but he threw for like 115 yards. His numbers aren't great. His team's record is, but he needed an actual target. So give me Emmanuel Sanders in the world of fantasy football.
I actually think you can make a case that both of them downgraded their fantasy outlook because of the trades. The 49ers are ahead most of the time and are a majority running football team. The same thing could be said for the Patriots, and they just spread up their targets so much, it's hard to see Mohamed Sanu getting a bunch of them. They're both coming from pass-happy teams because the Broncos and the Falcons were down a lot. Nobody passes the ball more often than the Falcons. I think you can make an argument that both of them actually have a worse fantasy outlook now than they did prior to the trades, but if I'm going to take one of them, I would agree with Sean, actually. I think I would go Emmanuel Sanders.
What about in the real world, C-Dot? How much better do you think this makes the Patriots, if at all?
I mean, I think the Patriots, I think their biggest weakness was just skill position players on the outside. I think they needed a player. I think Mohamed Sanu, I would say maybe it takes you 2-3 weeks to kind of get integrated into the offense. I think it's a really smart move for the New England Patriots. I would just be out on the San Francisco passing game. So Jimmy Garoppolo has started 14 games for the San Francisco 49ers. It's crazy that he still has not started a full 16 games for the San Francisco 49ers. He has 19 touchdown passes and 14 interceptions. Like, at some point, the other shoe just has to drop. They are 12-2 in games started by Jimmy Garoppolo, and they have gotten below average quarterback play. Like, at some point, you need your quarterback to at least be decent. He hasn't even been that in San Francisco.
Frisco's 12-2 with him as their starting quarterback.
12-2 in his 14 starts.
And he was 5-0 in New England. 17-2 as a starting quarterback. Say it with me, guys. Jimmy.
19 touchdowns and 14 interceptions. He is Case Keenum.
That's
he wins games? That's who Jimmy Garoppolo is.
I bet
the
Bears would love to have him right now.
I think he would be Mitch Trubisky in that offense. Like I think San Francisco.
Come on. My guy's better than Mitch Trubisky and Joe Flacco.
I mean this seriously. I don't know how much better Jimmy Garoppolo. He has 7 touchdowns and 6 interceptions this year. Like, he's incredibly average. He's just on a team that could run the ball and play defense really well and has a really good coach. They're 6-0 with this quarterback play. Like, I think Jimmy Garoppolo is just the definition of average. This is in the perfect ideal situation. This can't sustain itself for a long period of time. Coming up momentarily, we will get into the cover two, but first let's give you a chance to enterprise.
Going to air.
Quiz.
I'm sorry, but all questions must be submitted in writing.
The Pop Quiz is presented by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Today's Pop Quiz is a movie. Hit it, BK.
Reach out.
I feel something.
You feel it?
Yes, I feel it.
That's the force.
Really?
Wow, it must be really strong
with
you.
I've never felt anything. Ow!
Oh, my bad. I apologize. If you know what movie that is, be calling number 6 to 913-576-7610. Don't turn that dial. We will get into the cover two. One college football and one NFL topic coming up shortly. Keep it locked in. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.